This is class number 12 in the Econ 111 Economics course. In today's class, we continue to consider issues related to material found in chapters 19 and 20 of your textbook. The assignment for chapter 19 is due by class number 13. Those who want to do the extra credit work should do the work described in Exhibit 8. The assignment for chapter 20 is due by class number 14. Those who want to do the extra credit work should do the work described in Exhibit 9. Chapter 19 in your textbook discusses the role of government in the economy. We have noted in previous classes why the Bible suggests government should intervene in the economy at points and not allow a purely laissez-faire stance, or not to take a purely laissez-faire stance. As you will recall, the Bible teaches that government has a role in upholding the principles of the Ten Commandments in commerce. So, for example, it is appropriate that government prohibit abortion services, prostitution, and Christian Sabbath desecration, and that it regulates pollution and unsafe working conditions. Now, as you might imagine, humanistic economists are not going to explain the rationale for government intervention in this way. I would like to spend some time now describing how they explain the need for government intervention. There is truth in what they say, but it still is an inadequate explanation, but it is worthy to understand, and again, some of it has certain legitimacy. Humanistic economists distinguish positive economics versus normative economics. Positive economics is economics incorporating the scientific method without any value judgments. For instance, based upon studies of the relation of inflation and unemployment, certain conclusions may be reached by induction. Normative economics, on the other hand, incorporates value judgments. For example, normative economics might say we ought to allow more inflation if we can reduce unemployment, based upon a value judgment concerning inflation and unemployment. Using this more humanistic terminology, instead of terms like divine moral law or the Ten Commandments, economists say that one reason for government intervention in the economy is because of normative judgments that free market outcomes are not always correct. For example, if Americans make a normative judgment that women are entitled to the same wage as men in a given occupation, then they might want the government to intervene, not to allow businesses to do otherwise. Another reason given for government intervention relates to externalities. Externalities are those social costs or benefits associated with an economic transaction that are not incurred by the buyer or seller in the economic transaction. For instance, let's say a steel plant in Pennsylvania sells steel to a car company in Michigan. And let's say this steel plant pollutes the air in Pennsylvania in the process of manufacturing the steel. The pollution is a social cost of the economic transaction, but neither the steel company nor the car company absorbs all the negative consequences of the pollution. There are many people in Pennsylvania who will experience the pollution who were in no way associated with the economic transaction. So the pollution is an example of a negative externality in this transaction. Government may intervene in the case of externalities in order to subsidize for positive externalities and to tax for negative externalities. Another reason for government involvement in the economy revolves around the topic of public goods versus private goods. Some goods are said to be public goods, while other goods are said to be private goods. A private good is a good that has exclusion and distributive characteristics, whereas a public good is a good which has non-exclusion and non-distributive characteristics. Non-exclusion means it is difficult, if not impossible, to exclude someone from receiving the benefit even if they do not pay. And non-distributive means it is difficult, if not impossible, to distribute to some and not to others. An example of a public good is national defense. Public goods are typically functions performed by governments. There are some quasi-public goods that have combined public and private good characteristics. Another rationale given for government interference is economic stabilization. For instance, automatic stabilizers are government policies already in place that promote deficit spending during recessions and surplus budgets during expansions. Income taxes and anti-poverty programs are examples of such automatic stabilizers. During recessionary times, income taxes decrease and anti-poverty programs increase, which have the effect of stimulating economic activity. But during prosperous times, income taxes increase and anti-poverty programs decrease, which have the effect of dampening economic activity. So one purpose they purportedly serve is to reduce the extremes of business cycles. And this is one of the rationales given for such automatic stabilizers as income taxes and anti-poverty programs. Other reasons that have been given for government interference include provision for information, such as food labeling standards, income redistribution, and curtailing or regulating monopolies, such as through antitrust actions. Economists have tried to determine the optimal level of government interference. Exhibit 28 shows some of their findings. You will recall in past classes that we said that the level of output where a firm is most profitable is that point where marginal cost equals marginal benefit. This is because that once marginal cost rises above marginal benefit, then each additional unit of output starts to decrease overall or total profitability. Analogously, the optimal level of government interference is that point where marginal social cost equals marginal social benefit. Exhibit 28 shows the definitions of marginal social cost and marginal social benefit expressed in terms we have already discussed. Let's take an example to understand this. Suppose we have a steel mill that produces steel but also pollutes proportionate to quantity of steel produced. In this case, private marginal cost, MC, equals the cost in terms of inputs like labor and material to produce each additional unit of steel. Marginal social cost, MSC, equals private marginal cost plus the additional harm that comes with the incremental level of pollution. Or put another way, marginal social cost equals private marginal cost plus the negative externality, which in this case is pollution. So again, remember that in this case, pollution is the negative externality, and the cost of each additional amount of pollution added for additional output, that cost, as it were, of that externality needs to be added to the private marginal cost to derive marginal social cost. Similarly, private marginal benefit equals the revenue generated for each additional output, and marginal social benefit equals private marginal benefit plus the additional good that comes with the incremental level of employment in the community, such as lower crime. In this case, the positive externality is said to be lower crime in the community. As long as marginal social benefit is greater than marginal social cost, then it is good to increase output by more units. In this case, by more units of steel to be produced. But once marginal social benefit equals marginal social cost, then that is the optimal level of production. If more units of steel are produced beyond the point where marginal social benefit equals marginal social cost, then each additional unit of production will decrease the overall level of social benefit because each additional unit has a higher level of marginal social cost than marginal social benefit. The government may choose to tax and subsidize businesses to reflect positive and negative externalities. For instance, government may tax polluters for each additional unit of pollution produced, and it may offer subsidies to businesses which generate jobs in the town. The optimal level of tax or subsidy is the value of the externality, as shown in Exhibit 28. So one way that governments often will essentially make the company feel the effects of either these positive or negative externalities is to subsidize or to tax given activities of the company. Finally, today, I would like to discuss how government interference can affect factor prices. Factor prices are the cost associated with the factors of production. The three factors of production are land, labor, and capital goods. Land includes land and other natural non-man-made materials such as raw materials, energy sources, and trees. Labor includes all forms of human productive effort, from blue collar to white collar to professional workers. We will refer to all payments for labor as wages, even though it conventionally also includes salaries, bonuses, etc. Capital goods represent the man-made machines, equipment, buildings, and other capital goods used to produce consumer goods and other capital goods. Capital is the money often used to enable businesses to finance the purchase of capital goods. When businesses borrow money to purchase capital goods, they pay interest to financial intermediaries or lenders. Now, without government interference, prices of labor and land are determined by the supply and demand of these factors available in the market. The less land available, that is, the less supply, the higher the price of the land, given a certain amount of demand. The more a certain labor is in demand, for instance, the talent of a highly skilled worker, the higher his or her wages. Changes in wage rates and prices of natural resources, such as land and raw materials, behave according to price and quantity changes. But government interference can affect the prices of labor and land. For example, the Social Security tax adds costs to the free market cost of labor. The tax effectively shifts the supply of labor to the left. In other words, if you were looking at a graph of supply and demand curves, the curve for supply would shift to the left with a tax on labor, so that the equilibrium point of quantity of labor demanded and supplied is less than it would otherwise be if there weren't such a tax. In other words, such a tax, in this case, tends to depress employment levels. Property taxes have a similar discouraging effect on land purchases. Now, as mentioned in a previous class, resources 5, 6, and 7 listed in Exhibit 1 help prepare students who want to try to take the AP exam in macroeconomics or microeconomics or both. At this point in the course, you need to start seriously studying them if you plan to try to take an AP exam. In the coming classes, number 13 and number 14, we will focus on the material in these resources. Let me suggest a way you might want to use Barron's AP Economics Exam Preparation Book, for example. Each chapter covers a topic that will probably be found in the AP Economics exams. You might briefly review the material in a chapter, then try to answer the questions at the end of a chapter. If you do well in answering the questions, then proceed to the next chapter. But if you do not do so well, then take time to review the chapter contents more thoroughly. This now concludes class number 12 of the Econ 111 course.